Blog Talk Radio.
Shades of Grey, and that's pretty much all we're going to say about it. I didn't want to
I didn't want for us to talk too much about the book, but the book centered around a lot of a sex addiction, right? So I thought about how can we like talk about this topic as a whole without promoting that and giving that publicity. And so a brave friend of mine, whom I've been knowing for a long time, and who has shared with me some things that have been going on in his life. I had been knowing about it way before, you know, any book had come out. And so in us talking, I've always, you know, talked to him about saying that you should write a book. Like, men should hear from you. Like, men should know that that this is a problem. It's not something that, you know, when guys kind of, how do they say it, spread their royal oats or something like that. Like, this isn't something that should be celebrated, right? And
right.
So, you know, and in his recovery, I just thought that his deliverance was so, it was just so awesome, and I just thought he should tell his story. And he's not quite ready to have a book out yet, but he's brave enough to share his story. And just for confidentiality, we're going to refer to him as Michael H. And in a second, our listening audience will hear from him. But I just want to note that when I think of any addiction, as well as sex addiction, I think of it as a stronghold. And so, you know, Demetria, before I go into that whole stronghold thing, I just want to give you an opportunity to say anything around that if you wanted to say something.
Well, what I do want to say is give some instructions to our listening audience. Let me do that first and foremost. If you want to call in and add your voice to the conversation a little later, I'm going to give you that phone number right now. It's 347-637-3604. That's for those of you who are listening over the internet. I do realize that there are some of you who have already called in. I see your numbers in the studio. If later on in the show, after we've heard our guest story, if you do want to call in, ask a question or make a comment, you're welcome to do so. And what you'll need to do is simply push the number 1 on your telephone if you've already dialed in. I also want to say to those of you listening over the internet, and this came to my attention last week, a friend of mine, her computer was giving her a problem, so she decided to go ahead and dial in and listen on the phone. So those of you listening over the internet, you can dial in on your phone and listen in over your telephone. I just want to give you that little heads up in case you run into an issue with your computer as well. So with that said, I'm very interested and eager to get the topic rolling tonight. And just, you know, you've been talking to me through the week about it, and I've got some questions myself. Got some questions, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, cool. And so, you know, like we said, ministry along the way, we just kind of want to bring real-life issues that Christians deal with from day to day and trying to figure out how to deal with those issues, as well as people who are not believers. Maybe they may hear something that will draw them closer to Christ. And again, we get ready to allow our guest share his story. I just want to, again, point out that while we're talking about this and we know we have medical help, that we also want to make certain that we identify all of the things that we're dealing with, the struggles that we're dealing with, they are strongholds. And as I was talking to Michael H., I was so happy to hear that he even realized that as well. So we're just going to get right into it. I want to introduce a very special friend to me. He's a very, very close friend. I've been knowing him for quite some time. And I just want to commend him for sharing his story. And it's an unselfish act because, again, as he was talking to me and even helping me, I guess, learn how to identify guys that may have this issue, it just made me appreciate him even more that he saw the importance and the need to kind of share his story. So, hello.
Hi. First, giving glory to God because without him, I wouldn't be where I am. And I'm feeling like he's using me to help some other people. So I give him the glory. And you said something about guys. Women are sex addicts as well. Women can be. Let's just get right into it. And this is not about me, although I'll give reference to my own story because it's the one I know the best. Definition of addiction. Addiction is the compulsive need for and use of a habit-forming substance. And they give examples, heroin, nicotine, or alcohol, characterized by tolerance. Now, let's stop because tolerance might be confusing to people. The word tolerance in this situation means that as you use the substance, it has a diminishing effect upon you, meaning that you have to use more each time or every time or as you go along. So, again, we're going to go back. Compulsive need for and use of a habit-forming substance such as heroin, nicotine, or alcohol characterized by decreasing hit as you use it more and more, and it has well-defined psychological symptoms upon withdrawal, meaning once you stop it, you do feel something. You might itch, you might crave, but you will have withdrawal. So that's the definition of addiction. And they give a short one. Persistent compulsive use of a substance known by the user to be harmful. The short definition to me is better. In other words, you're addicted when you use something and you know it can kill you or harm you, but you still have to do it. So now we've gotten the definition of addiction out there. My drug of choice was sex. The same way that someone will break into your house or break into his mother's house and steal her purse or steal her jewelry or steal her phone or steal her money and go buy his crack. And that's his mother who he loves. But he's addicted. So that same drive was in me to have me act out. And I acted out for 28 years before I came into the program that I'm in. I'm in SAA, all of the anonymous programs, Narcotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, they all get their foundation from AA. So we're very thankful for AA for being the first anonymous program to find a way of recovery. And it's a 12-step program. I call it a God-based program. There are agnostics, and there are other people who don't like that term. So it is the God of your understanding, because they're atheists as well. So it's I'll say a God-based program. How does one become a sex addict? There are several ways that a person can become a sex addict. I've been in this program for 4.5 years. I'll talk about how I became a sex addict. My father was a sex addict. My father was an alcoholic, and my father was absent in my life. Throughout my entire life, up to this point, my father and I have never slept under the same roof, and he's deceased now, so it's not going to happen. So he was absent. So those were probably the main three factors, and there were some others. I came from a very strong religious background, upbringing. In my family, we did not talk about sex. That can backfire on some people. Some people do well with that. Some people, that pushes them on to problems. I actually think it's better to talk to your children about sex than to have it be so much of an issue that you don't talk about it. That, to me, doesn't work out so well. All right, let's say in my case, it did not work out so well. It also contributed to my turning out the way I was. I did mention a strict religious background. There's studies that show that if you really, really, really put the foot down and pedal to the metal with your kids religiously, that can push them in a direction like the one I wound up in. Doesn't happen for everybody. But I'm just giving some of the background from me.
Okay.
As I've been in this program 4.5 years, I've been to meetings with a lot of people. I attend 4 meetings a week. So that's a lot of meetings over 4.5 years. And I've heard stories. I do not mention anybody's story, but I'll tell you ideas of what I've heard because it's an anonymous program. You will not hear me mention anybody's name. But I've heard stories of gentlemen who told me that their fathers brought them to the first prostitute when they were 16, 17, 18, and some younger than that. So society contributes to sex addiction. Mm-hmm. If you teach your son, okay, son, you're 16 or you're 18, here's your first prostitute, I'm going to pay for her. A lot of men told me their fathers did that. Some men told me their brothers did it. Some men told me their uncles did it. So that promotes. Society is very lax on men as well. We let men rape their own children and somehow let them off. It happens all the time. You can read court cases on it. We find a way to say, oh, that's okay, that guy's not guilty, or that's not his daughter, that was her daughter, and she was promiscuous. Also, women not standing up for their daughters. So many women have their daughters fall into those situations, and then they don't believe them, or they say they don't believe them, or they say they don't know. So, you know, there's a lot of things that can contribute to sex addiction. But as I mentioned, the absence of a parent, that can push you the wrong way. Also, there's an adult child of an alcoholic parent, entire syndrome. Father was an alcoholic parent, although he was absent. Just the fact he was an alcoholic, and he came to visit me about once every year growing up, and that wasn't much. But even the times when he came, he was drunk. So I was exposed to his alcoholism. So being an adult child of an alcoholic parent, most of those people turn out as alcoholics. Thank God that didn't happen. For me, the one thing I know, if I'd have added drugs to my life, I'd be dead. And I know that because my life was pretty wild on the sex addiction end. So anything else, I wouldn't have made it. I would have exploded. So the reason I'm here is just to talk about the fact that sex addiction is real.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and I'll go ahead and mention it now, the American Society of Psychiatric Medicine does not recognize sex addiction. We're not going to get stuck on that because we know that if you talk to most policemen, they'll say they don't racially profile. So we know that everything isn't right. We talk to the government, they say, oh, we're not in that country, and CIA is there. So we know that everything isn't right in this world, and unfortunately, the American Society of Psychiatric Medicine hasn't quite gotten it yet. And those are the psychiatrists. You know, those guys, we go to them for treatment. I went to a psychiatrist for treatment, and he misdiagnosed me. He told me I had ADHD. And sex addiction ain't ADHD. Sorry. You know, it's a big difference. The guy wanted to give me Ritalin.
Mm-hmm.
So he misdiagnosed, and I went to him telling him I was a sex addict. I mean, I didn't write it on a sheet of paper or spell it out. I told him what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. I just want to mention for the listeners that that you are a physician.
Yes,
yourself.
Right.
I just want to clear. I just want to put that out there so that just so folks can know when you're talking about a lot of medical terms, if you do bring them up, that you're not just of your head, that you are a clinical professional, medical professional. Just wanted to put that out there. As I'm listening to you, Michael, you know, again, when I mentioned earlier about Stronghold and you talk about the addiction and the impulse and not being able to overcome it on your own, and you and I have talked about this before. And in my Bible school class, and I'm glad I was able to find my one pager that we're often given at Bible study. I just want to share with folks about strongholds. And so this is not my definition. Again, I've gotten this from class. A stronghold can be defined as a pattern of unrighteousness that holds you hostage outside of the will of God. Therefore, overcoming a stronghold always involves spiritual solutions, because the stronghold is rooted in a spiritual cause. And as I heard you mention, even in the 12-step program, I am happy to know that it does involve believing in God. And you showed me, you know, copies of it, and I know where God is mentioned, and then possibly in one sentence or another it may say believing in a higher power. But as you've told me that your higher power is Jesus Christ, and I'm, you know, I am, you know, happy to hear that, and I want you to share with folks how you've even implemented your relationship with Christ in helping you to overcome this situation.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Can I ask something before you go in that direction, before we move on from the things that you were saying? Saying in that sex addiction, you mentioned your father, the absence of a father, strict religious background, just some of the environments that a person can can be exposed to that might contribute to them falling into a sexual addiction, alcoholism, even society contributing. So is sex addiction really about sex?
Well, and I'll say this. Sex addiction is an addiction where your drug of choice involves sex. Now, unfortunately, I'll give you some examples. I have been in meetings with some gentlemen who have never touched another woman, yet they're sex addicts and they're absent from their wives. And, of course, we're talking about pornography addiction. So in that case, they're not having sex with anyone. They're having sex with themselves, but they're making themselves absent. I like to see the woman who can compete with 200 billion women. There is no woman who can compete with you being able to click a mouse and a woman's face changes, her breast size changes, her waist size changes, her buttock size changes, and she's doing all these acts that are incredible to any man's mind. We see, we taste, we hear, we smell. We're tactile men. That's just how we are. We're from Mars, you guys are from Venus. So we get this stimulus, and then we're absent. We can't even be there for our loved ones. So sex addiction can take a lot of different routes, but the addiction has something to do with sex in it.
Okay,
there's some
so
sexual,
it's not necessarily
there's some sexual
it's
act
not necessarily about the sex. Just like alcoholism may not be about the alcohol, it might it's about a hole in somebody's life and they're filling it with this
particular
thing.
There's a lot. Okay. Yeah, usually there's something wrong in a sex addict's life. There's something that's gone wrong. And I forgot to mention, unfortunately, a lot of the people who are sex addicts have been abused sexually at some point in their lives. So that happens as well. Or they witnessed the abuse of a parent along the way. So something usually has to trigger a sex act. I have not heard of or met someone who just walked into sex addiction because they thought it was a cool thing to do.
Okay.
I haven't seen or met that guy in the meeting yet, and I've met thousands of guys in meetings in 4.5 years.
Right. And Demetria, when he mentioned about the religious component and somebody being pushed into religion, that's why it is important that I do want for him to talk about the relationship. And so, and that's why I wanted him to kind of share that part, because there is a difference. And I heard him, and that's what prompted the question, because I heard him loudly when he said people could be pushed into strict environments that can cause it can be a stressor. But in this instance, there's a difference, and we've talked about this, between religion and the relationship.
Right. Let me just mention that. And I'm a Christian, and I absolutely love my relationship with God. But I'm sad to say, but it's just the way it went. It's just the way God had my story go. I was 53 before my relationship with God really got tight. I was raised in church. I went to church every Sunday. And things went well. And then when I hit my adult years and started becoming more active in my addiction, I stopped going to church because I couldn't mix the two in my brain. What sex addicts do, a lot of addicts do, is called compartmentalization. In other words, we put our sex addiction in the box. Right next to that box is our spirituality. And right next to that box is work. And right next to that, the mind of compartmentalization in the life and death of
child?
No, we were talking the other night about the singer who his father shot him.
Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye compartmentalized, and then he died. He was in a mansion. In one room, he had a priest, and he had lots of money. So he paid that priest to stay in that room. And then he went to the next room, and there was a prostitute. Then he went to the next room, and there was cocaine. Then he came out of that room, and he went back and prayed. Then he came out of that room, and he went downstairs, and he had some priestess who did voodoo. And then he went to another room, and he actually compartmentalized. He didn't know where he wanted to go with his life. At the end, these are the last days of his life. He had these people in his house. He had playing music. He was playing music with them. So he compartmentalized, and he was confused, didn't know what to do. And his father got tired of that, shot him to death. But he compartmentalized. That is the perfect example of compartmentalization. It's an extreme one, but that is exactly what we do in addiction. We say, well, I'm just going to steal this money from mom. I'm going to put it back. Well, we never put it back. We go buy the crack. Now she doesn't have a TV.
Okay.
But we rationalize. Compartmentalization is rationalization because you have to get your drug. So that's what compartmentalization is about. But let's get back to something Tanya mentioned earlier. The 12 steps. The first step says we admit it, that we are powerless over our addiction, and that our lives have become unmanageable. If you can't realize that you have a problem, you cannot be saved. I can't take you and bring you to a therapist and have him talk to you. You're going to walk out. It's kind of like some of the stars that we see. Whitney Houston had someone do an intervention in her home. It's her home. She's used to that bathroom. She's used to that bedroom. You've got to leave your house, some treatment center, to have some success. When stars and people who have enough money bring somebody into their home for an intervention, that's not an intervention. That's just a weekend with somebody, some stranger in your house who's trying to help you and they can't. So the first thing is you have to really, really, really realize you have a problem. The second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Okay? Now you're realizing that you're insane. And that's it. Addiction is insanity. We do the wildest things. There are about 10 different examples of when I could have been dead through my addiction. And I mean really dead. So it's not a joke. I'm not doing this because I don't have anything else to do on a Tuesday night. I'm talking about my life. And some people say, oh, sex addiction is not an addiction. It's just what men do. It's an excuse. No, it's real. Patrick Corns is the world's authority on sex addiction and proven that the same center in the midbrain lights up when a person is masturbating to porn, excuse me for using that term, as when someone is using heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, marijuana. The same center in the brain lights up. So that to me is sort of proof that it's an addiction. So even though, you know, we're not going to get back to the American Psychiatric Association, I believe that it's an addiction in my life and the lives of all the people that I've met along the way have shown me that as well. The third step, and I'm not going to go through all 12 steps, so I'll stop with this step. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. Mm-hmm. That's the third step. So just those three steps, pretty important. God is the answer. Mm-hmm. And really, I feel like no matter what the question is, he is. And this is not a God commercial. I'm just talking about my life. I'm talking about addiction. And I'm talking about the 12 steps and how they relate to addiction and how you can get from that step all the way to the 12th step. If you follow that, that is a pathway
for overcoming,
the stronghold that addiction can have on you. If you say in step one your life is unmanageable, then that means that addiction has a stronghold on you.
Sort of how when we repent. When we repent and we strip ourselves of the old way and we take on a new creature, and hearing you, when you just explained the whole Marvin Gaye experience and how people compartmentalize and how it's difficult to try to overcome something while you're waddling in it.
Right.
And that's
right.
What I hear you saying. You got to get out of it. You have to remove yourself from that situation.
That's right.
And some of this stuff has to be intentional.
That's right.
And even in a drug addiction, even with alcoholism, as I hear you keep merging the two, that you have to literally do some intentional things and remove yourself out of it.
Right. For example, the story you hear, at least I hear the most, when you're talking to people who are drug addicts, is they'll always say, well, can't hang out with those same guys and go in the same corner where I used to score my crack. Why not? Because people are still scoring crack.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go hang out with them and you're around them, chances are you're going to fall back in that hole. And it's like quicksand. It's going to drag you in. So, yeah, you have to change your friends. You have to change your outlook. You have to change the way you do things. And it, like you said earlier, it's intentional. I've never heard of people accidentally getting clean, sober, or getting away from any stronghold. It doesn't have access.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a lot of essential steps.
We're just getting started, and we've said a lot of stuff, Demetri. I know you would probably agree. We are due for a break, so I think we're going to pause right there, and we will be right back. This is Ministry Along the Way.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get
Hello, we are back from our break. This is Ministry Along the Way Radio. I am one of your co-hosts, Demetria.
And I am Tanya. Welcome back.
Topic is Road to Recovery, One Man's Story. We have a special guest with us tonight. His name is Michael, and he is sharing his story with us, one that was a past of sexual addiction, and now he is in recovery. He has been in recovery some 4.5 years. Am I correct about that?
That's correct.
That's right. And but thank God for that. That's a very good report. So recovery is possible.
It's very possible. For me, I'll touch on my story a little bit because, again, it's the one I know best. As my addiction started out, unfortunately, the way a lot of guys act, Tanya mentioned that I'm a physician. When I hit my residency and in med school and into my senior in med school, it was sort of a joke to see which guy could have the most girlfriends. And you rotate through different hospitals. So you have a girlfriend at Germantown Hospital. I did my residency. I did my med school in Philadelphia. So, you know, a girlfriend at the Episcopal Hospital, girlfriend at the Germantown Hospital. And you think that's funny. And guys competed like that. But I noticed, looking back, a lot of those guys stopped, and I did not.
Hmm.
That got me started.
Oh, okay.
And very soon. Now, again, that's just how my addiction showed its ugly head. It would have come out, I understand, from talking to my therapist, it would have come out somehow, somewhere, some way. So that's how it started for me. I never turned the switch off. And it just grew,
okay,
and grew and grew and grew. And I just added women on and added on. And then before I knew it, I was at the height of my addiction dealing with 30 different women at the same time. Now, they weren't all in the same city. A bunch of them were out of town. But the chaos and confusion, addiction is craziness.
Let me slow you down for one second. When you said 30 women at one time, because I know the story and the folks don't, this was at one time in 1 year, correct?
Right, the worst year.
Yeah.
The worst year.
Absolutely.
It peaked. It peaked and then it went down. Started out one girlfriend, and then she was busy. So, all right, I'll pick up another girlfriend. That way, when she's busy, the other one's not.
Mm-hmm.
And then both of them were out of town. Okay, so a third girlfriend. So it just it ballooned, and it took several years. I acted out for 28 years. The last were the worst. And it took a while. Like I said, it took a while for it to get as bad as it got. At the very tail end, before I ended my treatment center, I was dealing with 11 women. I had one main girlfriend and 10 women on the side, which was pretty sad when I look back at it. But I guess it was worse when it was 30. So, I guess, you know, I mean, it's just the way my addiction went. And a lot of, everybody's story is different. We all have sex in our story somewhere. For example, let me just go for a tangent just briefly. One young man who was in a treatment center with me, he had this elaborate scheme where he hit mirrors. His acting out was just looking down at a mirror that reflected up under some woman's panties. And he did that walking through the mall. That was his acting out. Of course, we know about kiddie porn, which is, you don't want to say the worst, because if you look at kiddie porn, someone's going to knock at your door and they're not coming to say hi and not giving you a cup of tea. They're arresting you. So you know, there's several ways of acting out. There's as many ways of acting out as there are flavors of coffee and tea in the world. And that's the difference between sex addiction and drug addiction and other addictions. I've met gentlemen who've been addicted to crack, addicted to methamphetamine, addicted to LSD, addicted to heroin, and they all say that they're cross-addicted. They have sex addiction and drug addiction. They all say they beat their drug addiction hands down, and they can't beat the sex addiction. So it's because it's so easy. You don't need money. You need money for most of those other addictions. You need money by alcohol. You don't need money for sex addiction. You can look out your window, see a woman pass, and then you're touching yourself and you're acting out. So you don't need anything but your mind and your body. So that makes it difficult. Plus, there are women everywhere. So when men and gay men, there are other men everywhere. And gay women, there are other women everywhere. So the stimuli are very high. They're very easy to get. You turn your television on, and there's a stimulus there.
Right.
So that makes sex addiction is kind of tough because of all of those different things.
And for your world, and I'm glad you brought up the money part of it, because getting to the point of when you realize this was an issue, and as you and I talk about it, the amount of money that you spent on this addiction, do you mind sharing that?
I don't mind. Okay. When it's gone, it's never coming back, and maybe this will help. I spent $400,000 that I can trace. But I was making a lot of money. I was making at least $300,000 a year, and some years I did better. See, this was the problem. I'm going to give you my big four. Sex, find out how I could pay for it. I worked my butt off. I didn't sleep. I just didn't. I worked so many different places that on some days I would show up at the wrong clinic. I drive up to the clinic on Tuesday and say, oh, Dr. Honey, you were here yesterday. You're supposed to be across town. And so that's how my life was. So I didn't sleep. I was working so hard, had to make money, so I had to pay for these women. So that's how my addiction played out. I have buddies who are in the restaurant business. They're making millions of dollars as well. They're flying women across the world to go be with them when their wives can't go on their business trips. So, you know, again, addiction, you can spend some money in addiction, and some of these guys have spent as much as me or more. And some guys, I've met guys who don't spend any money and still act out fairly, you know, quite a bit. My addiction.
I even noticed spending over the time, because you and I had a platonic friendship, and I even noticed over time even your behavior changed, like your attitude. Like, you're much kinder. You want to touch on sometimes the mood swings and
course,
how, yeah.
Of course, addiction is going to set you up for all types of changes in your life, because some girl's not going to show up, you're going to be angry at her, and then you might happen to call, I'm angry at her, and I'm going to go up on you because you're the person there. So, you know, a lot of things can go wrong in your life when you live an addictive type of personality, addictive type of life. And then, you know, that spills over into all your entire life. I'm glad to say now that I'm present for my family. I'm present for my mother. I'm present for my friends.
Amen.
And I wasn't before. I would go so far as I had so many girlfriends, I'd pay one of them to go bring my mom to the doctor while I'm acting out with another girl. That's what I mean, another woman. That's what I did.
Wow.
So, you know, I used money. I had to have sex. I couldn't do without it. So just an example, 4.5 years, there was not 4.5 days that I went. Once I started acting out real badly, I did not go 4.5 days without sex. If no one was there, I put my computer on and did what I had to do to just keep myself, you know, going and stimulated until the next person showed up. And that was pretty sad. You know, it was so bad that I would act, like I said, sex was first. I would leave my office to go act out. Unfortunately, I brought people into my office and locked the door, acted out, put them out the back door, and went back to work. So, you know, and a lot of guys lose their jobs from looking at pornography on their computers at work.
Right.
You know, so that's the losses can be devastating. You can lose your job. You can lose your life. You can lose your wife.
Yeah.
You can lose your kids. You can lose your family. So that's addiction. Remember the short definition was, you know, it's harmful, so it has a stronghold on you, it has a grab on you, and it doesn't want to let you go.
Right.
You know, addiction is a mind disease. Go ahead.
So what led you to the road to recovery, and what has that recovery process been like for you?
My life was just totally out of control. I was dating all these different women, and it wasn't going well, and that women fighting on my porch because I wasn't that bright. I'm not the brightest bulb tack. I would have people come to my house. I'd say, okay, come by at 6:30. Okay. What happens if I come by at 6? I see somebody walking on your steps because they're leaving. That's how I did it. Wow. I'd have somebody come, leave, somebody else come. So women weren't that dumb. They knew I was. You know, they knew I was hooked. And they knew that I was playing all these games because I wasn't available except on the days when I told them I was available.
Wow.
So people sat outside of my house, more than one person. And then so let the fight at my house and craziness, because I'm at my house. I'm not at a hotel. You know, I'm not that bright. So I was hooked. I had to have what I had to have. And I was kind of raw with the way I did things. So I got busted a bunch of times. I had threats on my life. Thank God I'm still here. Thank God I didn't get AIDS. God's been there the whole time.
Praise God.
You know, when you look in the sand, you just see two footprints. Now I'm walking next to him, but he carried me on 28 years.
When did he get your attention? Because, like I said, I know the story, but when did...
In 2010, again, my life was just confused. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Addiction is craziness. And called a gentleman to actually come to my home to do an intervention. And just like I mentioned before, those usually don't work. And he told her, he said, look, we got a less than 10% chance. Why don't you have your brother go to his treatment center? So she mentioned it to me, and I was starting to think about it. And I had a young lady break up with me, and I thought she was the love of my life. So I said, well, I'm going to go to the treatment center to get her back. So I went. And they let me sit in the lobby all night saying, no, you're here for the wrong reason. And since I was an hour and a half away, I said, well, you know, I'll stay. And I said, no, you can't just stay. I said, okay, I'm here for myself. Because I went in saying I'm here to get this person back who left me at a treatment center. It turned my life around. And I'm glad to say that I've been sober from my main acting out for that entire time. I've had some slips. I can't say I haven't looked at pornography or done anything else over the whole 4.5 years. I've slipped. But I haven't gone back into my addiction. I haven't acted out with a woman in 4.5 years. I haven't touched a woman in 4.5 years. So I'm not perfect. I've touched myself. I'm not proud of that. And that's the thing. I have to say this about the movie Addicted. That movie came out before this one, this last one, 50 Shades of Grey. The movie Addicted was pretty good. It showed a woman, and that helped because it just lets people know that, hey, women can be victims of something. And it did not show what happened to her for her to be addicted. It didn't. It started with her being addicted.
So women can be sex. Women are sex addicts.
Yeah, it can be.
It,
unfortunately, it's just unfortunate. It's the way it is. So, but that it showed a woman. The only thing about it is at the end, she went to one meeting. Now, she did struggle going to the therapist for months. It showed that. She went to one meeting, and she was cured. And her husband walked in, and the music played, and fade to black.
Can you tell me some of the consequences that you had to deal with? Because there were some consequences. You know, when you speak of God saving you, but he got your attention in a lot of ways, and your life is completely different now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we don't have the money that we had. So I want folks to know that there's consequences, you know.
I lost everything.
Uh-huh.
My acting out took me down a road where I got in trouble and lost my life. So thank God it's been promised back to me, and I'm just waiting for it to come. Literally, it can come any day. But I credit that to me turning my life around and putting God first. Because, unfortunately, I know some gentlemen who've lost their licenses or lost their careers, and they never get them back. Or they lose their wife, never get it back. So I've lost everything. But I'm on the road back, and I've been told that I'll be restored. So, again, only God. Only God can do that. So, again, I'm not just here because I have nothing to do on Tuesday. This is my life. I think it's very seriously. And I'm hoping that some people are being touched by this and they're realizing that, wow, that could be me.
I'm sure they are.
I remember a few years ago, and I was in my addiction, but I stopped in front of TV. I almost started crying. I saw myself. There was a young man on TV. This was Sally Jesse Raphael. She's been on TV for years. This young man married a young lady, and she was running from him. She was hiding from him. He was having sex with her every day, 2 and 3 and 4 times a day. And he was boldly saying, well, you're my wife, I'm married you. And she said, I didn't know it was going to be like that. And Sally was trying to tell him, okay, you married your wife. And he was saying, well, I don't want to have sex with anybody else. But Sally was saying, well, let's not kill her in the first year.
Wow.
So I looked at that and I said, well, that's me. But I wasn't married. So I sat down and watched that whole program. Now, what I missed was that, you know, his thing was that he was obviously a sex addict because he was using sex just – really, he was going to kill this woman in bed. She was worn out. She was literally hiding from her husband. She showed up at the show. She had been missing for a month, and he couldn't find her. And he said, well, you still married me, and you took a vow, and you said, oh, yeah, and you're supposed to use the mix. So he just didn't understand that his urges were more than most, sort of like what I was doing with different people, and he needs to curb that. I missed everything and didn't reel me in, but I realized I was looking at myself on TV in another way.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't stop me. It took me hitting a wall, losing a lot of stuff, and then realizing that I needed to turn my life around because I was in a relationship that just wasn't good. I wasn't supposed to be in that relationship. And then when I lost that relationship, I'm trying to get it back. I never needed to be in that relationship in
but
the beginning.
When you told me that story, I said, man, God is awesome. Because
you
had gone to the facility to get help for this woman.
Right.
Who wasn't good for you because she was a distraction and she was aiding that addiction. But in that, you got deliverance from that woman
right.
and also from
and
the
from
addiction
right.
and from the other women.
Right.
So
right.
I just say, you know, that's the you know the saying we often hear that God will take, he'll you know, turn the bad around for good.
And you talk from your bottom. We talk about bottom
mm-hmm.
and addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you hit rock bottom, you say that's when we come in. If you haven't hit bottom, you're not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I sponsor people. I'm sponsored. I talk to people all the time. And I've unfortunately lost a lot of sponsees because they're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I lost a sponsee, I was, but I had to realize that young man wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
So you let him go, and you just tell him, look, call me when you're ready, and be careful.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you can tell someone. If they're acting out, you don't want them to kill themselves. You tell them, look, don't go barging into your, because I read about it not too long ago. A young man, a football player, goes to the young lady's house while her other boyfriend's there, and one of them shoots the other.
Wow.
Okay, so they're both fighting over this young lady, and one of them is dead. You know, so I don't. You know, so there's some sexual involved somewhere. The relationships, both of them, and let me just give you some guidelines because we run out of time. And a lot of people are not going to like this, but this is what if you're acting out, or if you're in having sexual relations with more than one person,
mm-hmm.
that's acting out.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Say it again.
If you're having sexual relations or a very strong relationship, you can even not have sexual relations.
Mm-hmm.
You can have an inappropriate emotional relationship with someone. But if you're doing that with more than one person, if you're strongly attached to more than one person, having them think that you're their world and your world and you're, you know, vice versa,
mm-hmm.
but you do that with more than one person, that's acting out. Because what you're not realizing is that you're hurting another human being when they find out that you're involved with someone else.
And what does the program encourage?
The program encourages that you have a relationship with one person at a time.
And what have you decided to
do? Oh, I've shut down.
Whose program are you deciding to follow?
I'm on God's program.
And what are we waiting for?
Somebody's going to ring my bell and say, God sent me, I'm your wife. Well, it's not going to quite happen like that. But, you know, I'm you know, she's there. I don't believe God wants me to die alone, you know, and be lonely. But I'm waiting because I'm still working on myself. And it's working. I'm getting better. But no, that, just to give you the definition, I started back on that. We believe in SAA because people say, oh, well, you're a sex addict. That means you never have sex again. Alcoholics can't drink again. And drug users can't use drugs again. You can use sex appropriately. Sex is
it's a gift, like
number eight. First should be the attraction, the relationship, the dating process, getting to know someone. The problem with people these days, they have sex and then, what's your name? Get out of bed. What's your name? That's not quite the way we look at it in sex acting out. So that may offend a lot of people, but the fluidity of us passing our bodies and our body parts and our body fluids intimate with more than one person at a time.
So God knew best when he said sex and boundaries, right? And he left it for the marriage.
Boundary is a very, very big word in
mm-hmm.
sex addiction.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, all of us sex addicts, we have to have boundaries.
Yeah.
If we don't have boundaries, we can't work a program, right?
We all need boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a problem in society that we cross boundaries every single day inappropriately, every single day.
Demetria, is there anything you want to jump in and say?
I do. I want to ask, I know you're in recovery. Does recovery end at some point in time for you? Is there
a
marker?
That's a very good point. I attend meetings with some people who have been in the program for 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. It's suggested that people in recovery, now, for example, alcoholics, they try not to ever drink again because they know that that first drink can take them down the road. If a person who's a sex addict who's doing well, let's say after 5 years he's not going to go to meetings anymore, he's not going to see a therapist anymore, and everybody doesn't see a therapist. Everybody can't afford a therapist. one, and not everybody goes to meetings. So my program encompasses a lot of different things. I have a lot of anchors trying to hold me down. And one of them is a therapist. One of them is meeting, journal, a sponsor. I'm sponsored. So I try to incorporate everything. I go to church every day. I try to do a lot of things to help
friends
me.
Who keep you encouraged, friends, family
like,
members.
Right, that's it. So support. Mm-hmm. Support is very important. Now, if you leave all of your support, then you're flying, you know, solo. Some people make it that way. But it's encouraged that you stay in a community of support. So what some people do, they go to a meeting once a month. Some people go to meetings still every week. I know friends go to meetings every day, and some friends go to more than one meeting a day. So you do what you have to do for your program. You see?
Okay.
Kind of like some people say once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Some people say once a sex addict, always a sex addict. So you want to stay in community to help you. And this is the other thing. I've never heard of anybody recovering alone at Sex Addicts Anonymous. I've heard of people recovering alone in AA and NA. They lock themselves in a room, and they vomit a few days, and they have a couple of seizures, and they get up, and they throw that fumigate that room, and they throw that mattress away, and they recover from alcohol or drugs. That doesn't happen with Sex Addicts Anonymous. You do need some help and some support.
Demetria, we do have time to take calls because we're actually outside of where he's going to go in for group. You know, you and I, we arrange it this way so that we'll have a little bit more time. So if there are any
We have a caller who's been holding on for some time. So I am going to go ahead and add that call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Caller, do you have a question or a comment for us?
Yes, I'd like to ask. My name is Candace, or Candy. I'd like to ask Michael H., does he believe as a medical person that there should be some type of sexual screening, just as we do for psychiatric disorders and so forth, depression, for example? Why can't we do a sexual addiction screening test? They are available.
There are tests available. In fact, at the treatment center that I went to, they spent the first 5 days giving me test after test after test. And they kept, you know, it was basically situations. And do you look at porn? How many hours a day do you spend thinking about sex? And, you know, do you break up with your girlfriends and never see them again? Do you stalk them? So there were a lot of questions. I was impressed with this. I did not know. I didn't know what I was going to find there. I thought I'd walk in with the magic pill, walk out, and I'm cured. And, of course, the magic pill was God. But there are screening tests for sex addiction. So he administers it, and it was administered at the treatment center, and most sex addiction treatment centers do use those tests. So they are available. And when you say, why don't we, they are used. I guess the situation would be how, you know, who's going to do that? I mean, are we going to give that to everybody on their jobs? Or is it,
well,
I don't
thing,
know how do you get that
the
incorporated.
The thing was, a question came to my mind when I said, if you're a physician,
right,
and if you were at a hospital and the person came to you and you could see if they were suffering from a drug overdose,
right,
you're going to do certain assessments,
right,
and then you're probably going to refer them to a resource, right?
Right.
If someone came in and if, you know, brutalize your body because they've been masturbating.
Right.
Is there an assessment test in the hospital for something like
that's
that?
That's a very, very good point. And which mentioned that happened. I've been in meetings with many, many people who go through that problem, and a lot of us cannot. That's a pure sign of addiction. When you harm yourself, it's difficult for you to, because it's not an addiction.
Is there an assessment test?
But you know what? Usually they don't do that. Usually they'll just give you something.
If
you go into an emergency room where they're usually more concerned about the gunshot, that wound, the hit, some guy comes in holding his head saying, put this back on my neck. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're usually more concerned about that in emergency rooms. So it's the setting, you know, in urgent care, the setting. Some guy coming in, they're going to laugh. Oh, he's got an aspirin, so he's bleeding.
Right.
Yeah, hey, it's real. But usually they don't do that there. What we hope is that someone does an appropriate evaluation in terms of referring you, saying, hey, you need to see this psychologist. You need to go to Lighthouse Treatment Center. You need to call, you know, 734-0501. You know what I mean? Yeah, give you, you need to see Ben Nakata. You know, so they tell you to go to the right source. But I'm not so sure that most places do that.
Have
so
that right
you
now.
Have a very good, yeah, you have a very good point. And, yeah, the tests are available, and they work. I remember at my treatment center, they walk in on the 15th and say, oh, yeah, you score very high, you're a setback, you belong here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people who don't score high, they tell them, look, maybe you're not, and maybe you don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, so mm-hmm. those tests are very accurate. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. You have someone else.
Candace, thank you. Thank you for the call. Did you have another question or another comment?
No, thank you so much. And I just want to wish Michael H. all of the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you
Candace.
So much for tuning in
thank
and calling
for
in.
Thank you for your question. Thank you, Candace.
Okay, Misa,
okay.
We can take another call.
Okay. No, we don't have another caller at the time. We have got
okay.
so many people listening in by phone. I'm so happy to report. We've got about 17 people listening in.
Cool.
So,
cool.
Yeah, that's a very good report. I mean, I'm not there where you are, the two of you are, so I can't. I'm counting on you to kind of tell me when we're heading into a break here.
Okay, I sure will. Well, we can keep going and you know, skip the break. And excuse me, guys, if you happen to hear an airplane in the background, we are trying to make this work. And I know if Demetria hears noise, I mean, she may be on pins and needles because she's a stickler for getting it right.
That's true.
I know. I'm going to have to hear it, but I'm trying to make it work. But, you know, I just want to commend you first for coming out and talking to us. And you've even said that if we needed you to come back on, you would.
Sure.
And this is not just an issue isolated to athletes or, because, you know, we always hear about the fallen athlete that was, we've been hearing, you know, stories about athletes recently. And I just think that when they blow those type of people up, it's just, you know, people trying to put a face to the issue. But this has been happening,
okay.
right? This is not, this
yeah.
is a, like you said, this can be a female.
St. Augustine was a sex addict, and he's a saint. It's in the Bible.
Well, I mean, Solomon.
Right.
I mean, Solomon had a host of women.
David, King David.
You know.
So, yeah, it's biblical. Sex addiction is real. It's been around a long time. And, you know, it's taboo. You know, people say, oh, no, that's, you know, men use that as excuse. It's not real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the American Psychiatric Association now labeling it as, you know, an addiction. It's some vague term that I've forgotten and don't want to remember. Just some sort of acting out behavior that involves sex is the diagnosis that you get if you go into a psychiatrist and you tell them a story like mine. It says, oh, you're not an addict. You just, you know, you're just stuck in a rut and you'll be okay. You know, or give you Ritalin and tell you you have ADD.
Right.
I mean, wow. You know, that's kind
of
off.
I love the recovery part of your story because you're right. Because of the addiction and the distraction, you did lose some things,
I lost
but you gained so much, and I tell you that a lot. Like, you gained so much. I mean, you're much calmer, so you're a nicer friend, I would say. I mean, your family members
yeah.
probably would say that, and you are actually getting ready to be restored.
Yeah.
You shared with me when you went in front of the medical board that was their first time even hearing that a physician had lost his license due to sex addiction. So, you know, we may see this assessment in hospitals at some point, sometime. You never know, starting right here in New Orleans because of you. Who knows?
Yeah, well,
you know,
yeah.
God is amazing. No telling what
again,
may happen.
Again, I give all the glory to God. You know, however he wants to use me, I'm hoping this is helping some people. I'm hoping, you know,
mm-hmm.
also that I was listening to a program, and unfortunately there was a woman, and I wrote her name down, and I meant to call, but I didn't. Maybe I'll find a number and name and call. This woman was on TV. It was two different therapists, a male and female therapist. They were talking about sex addiction. And this woman, who's a therapist, said, oh, a little bit of porn is okay. That ain't quite right.
Mm-hmm.
No porn is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is these women and these children are demoralized, dehumanized. They're made into objects.
Mm-hmm.
And they're used. And I've met some of these people.
I remember you saying.
I went to a porn convention. At the time, I was in my addiction. So
I'm sorry, did you say porn convention?
I went to porn convention.
There are things that you and I know nothing about.
I see.
And I met, it was amazing, someone who you're looking at all day and all night. You're gawking and your eyes are open. But I was there for a whole weekend. I was with a gentleman who had something to do with the organization of it. And he was a physician, and his angle was trying to test everybody for AIDS. So we were with these people for 3 days, and we had the women who were the porn stars wearing our T-shirts, and all the guys came up to our booth, and we tested a lot of them. But I'm around these women. These women were a mess. They were all using drugs, unfortunately. They had to get high to go and perform these acts with these men. And one of them, she could never go to her home. They didn't even want her in her hometown. They were not proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her family. So we're destroying lives. You're looking at porn, you're supporting an industry that's destroying lives. You know, it's just not good. No porn is okay. I'm sorry. And it's a billion-dollar, probably a trillion-dollar industry. You know, it's, you know, again, it deals with sex, and sex is the oldest profession. Strippers, a lot of these people have to get high to do the things they do. They have men slap them on the butt, touch them inappropriately all over their bodies. They're not healthy people. We're destroying lives and souls. So I'm sorry. None of it's good. Visiting strip clubs ain't cool with your boys. Sorry. Women go with their boyfriends. That ain't cool. Women go on their own. So, you know, none of that's good. None of it's cool. It's an industry that is destroying souls every day. And, of course, sex sells. So, you know, we're swimming upstream. But having your stash of porn at your house, fellas, you need to throw it out.
It's just another way of Satan trying to destroy something that God made. And,
that's
you
it.
Know, God intended to be a gift.
Sorry, but that's
serious.
It. No,
as I, you
know,
I'm listening to you, and I'm listening to you, and I'm just like, man, because that's not what it was intended for. And it is something to be enjoyed, as, you know, I often hear so much when we're sitting in different studies and stuff at church,
right.
But in the right manner. And
right.
So, you know more about this stuff. You have conversations with more of those women. And just to hear that, not even realizing that they're coming from brokenness as well.
That's
and
right.
So, and it's just a vicious cycle,
it's
right?
It's a horrible
it's
cycle.
It's a vicious cycle.
A horrible cycle. I did want to make a plug for FAAtalk.org. That's one of the places you can get some help. That's a national website. There are offices in Houston, the International Service Organization is what it's called, but the website is FAAtalk.org, no space in between. I don't think it makes a difference if you can letters or make them small. And then it's FAA-recovery.org. Both of them are .org. One of them is FAAtalk, seven letters together, like it's one word, FAAtalk.org. And FAA-recovery.org, a lot of material, a lot of information. Once you go online.
Thank you for that.
About, yeah, you can get a meeting that night. I had a friend call me, and this was a person who was an old Act Out partner. We separated. We were no longer together, but we remained friends. We talked on the phone. She called me one night. She said, I'm worried about a friend of mine. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, my friend, she's sleeping with all these guys. I'm worried about her. And she said, I called this other guy, and he said, well, I'll take care of you. Come on over. And then she called me, and she was distraught. And I had just entered the program, and I just went out on the whim. I said, your friend is a sex addict. She starts crying, and she said, I'm talking about myself. That night, she got into the program. She got a sponsor. She did a meeting the same night. So, you know, that's called the 12th step. The 12th step is when you recover, or you're in recovery, I'm sorry, having had an awakening to your problem, you pass it on to others. So I did the 12th step early in the program, so I did this. Did it out of turn, but it was needed at the time. So I haven't worked the 12 steps in order, but I've done just about all of them, you know, sort of out of order. So if you go to those recovery sites, that'll help. I'll also put a plug in for Ben Licata. He's at Lighthouse Counseling at 4728 Justin Highway, only because he saved my life. So he saved mine. He could save someone else. And the phone number there is 504-01. Again, 504-734-0501. And even if he doesn't see you, he will refer you to someone else, or he'll send you to a meeting. The problem with therapy is it's expensive, and it's not covered by advisor's insurance. So if he can't help you, he'll send you somewhere where you can save money and still recover. So, you know, I mean, the man's excellent. He saved my life. Don't go overboard with the plug, but you know, they're all resources
out
there.
We need to know that
they're all resources.
Yeah, people, we need to be able to give people that information to let them know that there are resources available.
Yeah, and in other places, River Oaks Hospital has a program that deals with sex addiction. So there are lots of places. If you go online and put SAA or sex addiction and put help, a lot of resources come up.
I certainly do appreciate it. I know you said you can hang around for a couple of minutes, just a couple of minutes more. But I just want to check in with Demetria. Call in yet?
No, I have been checking the switchboard, and he has not.
Okay. Well, since you put in a plug, I want to put in a plug.
Go ahead.
And I want to say, just to continue to read about the stronghold, and the biggest plug of all, is the Christ, the power of Jesus Christ. And just want to read that. Hopefully this will encourage others as well. When we overcome strongholds in our lives as a result of Christ's power within us. So Christ's power is within us as we apply his truth to our situations and use our spiritual armor. And that's staying plugged and tuned into Christ, and that's by reading his word daily, fellowshipping with other people who can keep you encouraged, and staying in constant prayer and communication with Christ, and also seeking him for guidance on how to seek those resources that Michael just shared with us. Because you want to make sure you go to the proper place. I heard him say a while back that he had gone to a therapist, and the therapist misdiagnosed him. A psychiatrist who should have known better, misdiagnosed him.
Well, the problem is, if you're not recognizing something and you train your psychiatrist to be a certain way, they're going to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to realize that there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, down the road, once I was in recovery, my therapist sent me to a psychiatrist, and that gentleman did understand sex addiction, and he worked with me to help me get better. So I was actually seeing a psychiatrist and my therapist who's a sex addiction specialist, and it helped. And the reason he sent me to a psychiatrist because I was just depressed about what I was going through. So the psychiatrist helped me with the depression, and he helped me with my sex addiction, my therapist did. So I did meet at least one psychiatrist who's quite understanding of sex addiction, and he knows it is an addiction, and he knows how to treat it. So there are some. It's just that the society as a whole says sex addiction is not real.
Well, I'm glad to know you were pointed in the right direction. So, guys, you know, we can wisdom from Christ on guidance about where to go and just for constant strength and encouragement, because strongholds are just that. They're strong. They're too strong for us. And
wow.
So I'm excited for my friend. I really am. And we've had a friendship without all of that mess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have. And that's, you know, I mean, we're laughing.
One of the few who survived.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm so glad that,
which is good.
That
right
I was. Well, good, and I'm glad that I was able to stay in your life and also be an encouragement.
Yes, you were.
And you've also been an encouragement to me, too. And so, Nisi, we can take a break so that we can touch bases with the therapist, and we'll be right back, guys. This is Ministry Along the Way. Thank you for participating with us in this very sensitive topic. We'll be right back.
Now, double for that.
I know there are times your dreams stand to dust. You wonder as you cry why it has to hurt so much. Give me all your sadness. Someday you will know. You said, why were the old?
thank you for staying with us through our break. We are back. This is Ministry Along the Way Radio. I am one of your co-hosts, Demetria.
And I am Tanya, and we still have Michael H. with us. And we also have a very special guest, and he's a therapist, and I'm going to have him introduce himself in just a second, if you're ready.
Okay.
All right, hello. Do you want to say hello to the folks?
Good evening. Well, I guess it's good night to some folk. It's after 8 o'clock, so good night. Glad to be a part of your talk show host.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on. It's such
welcome.
This is such a sensitive topic, and Michael just really gave us some really a lot of insight on a person who has struggled with sex addiction and who's also still going through a mode of recovery. And so we just kind of wanted you to talk to us a little bit more about the fact that some folks don't even think that this is a real addiction. And if you can just shed some more light on that and then offer some resources. And Demetria, if you had any questions, you know, please feel free to chime in.
We do have one caller. Can we maybe get his question on the table and maybe you can cover that as well?
Okay.
Can we do that?
Go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, sir. You want to tell us your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Henry White. My name is Henry, and I'm calling from Metairie.
Do you have a question or a comment?
I think I have a comment.
Okay, go ahead. We actually just added our second guest to the show. He is a licensed clinical therapist, so this is perfect time. You can give us your comment, and he can help us digest it.
Yeah, I've been listening to the show, and I just wanted to comment on the topic at hand. He said that he has a sex addiction. Am I correct? I know that when we refer to most addictions, they tend to have an impact on our lives and our control of the things that we go through and our day-to-day situations and the way we handle life. I know we've all been in a situation where we've gone through a lot, and then I heard the call, him say earlier he referenced Marvin Gaye and some other things and situations as to how this addiction could come about. And I guess this is more of a question. How is it possible that, like most addictions, they tend to make you do anything to get the substance that you're addicted to and you need? If a lot of people had an addiction to sex and it were a true addiction, wouldn't you, excuse my French, rape or, you know, just do acts of violence and things? Because I know a couple addicts, and some are dear to me, and they've done, you know, some unimaginable things to get their drug of choice or the things that they needed that they were addicted to. And it just seems that sex is, it's really hard to convey.
And I completely understand your question. And the harm he did have, administer harm, and the harm was on himself and also the people that he came in contact with and putting himself at risk. I'm glad that you asked that question because we have our therapist on and he can shed some more light on this. So would you take it away?
Yeah, I was listening to the gentleman and I was just trying to make sure I got fairly good clarity about his question or statement. And I think we use the term sexual addiction because when you think of crack cocaine or whether it's alcoholism, at some point people do some horrendous things. They might rob, kill, steal from family members, even perform sexual acts to get the substance that they're craving. In this situation, we're talking crack. And the reality is there is a physiological dependency that's taking place that's demanding substance in the body because it's chemical or chemistry at that time. So when you talk about sexual addiction, sometimes with some individuals, sexual addiction sometimes can be closely traced back for some people around some aspects of their own abuse. Not everyone who's been sexually abused will turn out to be a sexual predator. However, when people have been sexually abused,
Many times they'll reenact aspects of their abuse, or they may engage in behaviors that will give them power. And so sometimes what you'll find is that with the sexual addicts, many times they'll be reenacting aspects of the abuse to gain a sense of power or control back in their life over a situation where the abuse took place where they had no control. And so this behavior increases over a period of time. A simple analogy might be when you think for some people who started using pornography, you know, years ago, pornography, people would use magazines. And then over a period of time, the magazines progressed to the point where they were using videos. And then from videos, it progressed to the point where a person needed to have more hands-on. So there's this progression that takes place. It's like they keep upping the ante because the behavior has this level of appetite or craving that they're trying to satisfy. And so you do have some people with sexual addictions where they engage in behavior. And sometimes, as it was stated earlier by the young lady who's the host, that sometimes this behavior may be self-inflicting. It may be more detrimental to the person that's acting out than to anyone else.
Okay, but wouldn't the when you think of terms of abuse and addiction, you lack control. I mean, you have little to none whatsoever. And, I mean, addicts will do whatever it takes day to day, throughout the day. This person can function normally. He can work a 9-to-5 and you know, have a social life and all these different things that just don't fit addiction, maybe disorder or some other term of use other than something as strong as addiction. Because, I mean, we've all just about had an experience with people who've been considered addicts or had an addiction, and it was something uncontrollable.
Right, but when you think about it, you're using addiction from, say, crack or alcoholism. And the reality, if you talk to somebody who's really struggled with sex addiction over a period of time, the reality is that that behavior causes deterioration in other aspects of a person's life. Just like a person who's an alcoholic, they might go to work every day. But I would tend to say over a period of time, there's going to start to be some deterioration. There's going to start to be some backlash in their performance. They're going to start driving while drunk because they're alcoholic, and they're not just drinking at night. They're drinking in the morning. And so there's a deterioration that's taking place in that person's life. Well, the same thing with sex addiction. Some individuals will get so caught up in the behavior and lose control to the point where, yeah, they're going to work. I've worked with people who had six-digit figure jobs as computer programmers, but could not stay off the internet looking at porn while at work. So this behavior progressively deteriorates the person's personal life. So at some point, yeah, it may look like everything is under control, but it is a gradual deterioration of the person's life, their performance, their integrity. A lot of things are impacted by sexual addiction. Lose marriages, lose employment, lose family members, lose a multitude of different things that can affect their lives. And that's why it's referred to as addiction.
Did that answer your question, sir?
I think it put it in a better perspective. I would say yes.
Did you have another question or comment?
No, I think I have a better understanding of it. But I know most people, and like they said throughout the show, it's really going to be hard to convince people that it's a real thing and you can be addicted.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling and sharing your thoughts, because you do represent a large audience out there. We just don't know enough about it. I think the average person, so that's one of the reasons for this topic tonight, to kind of to shed some light. We've been hearing about soft porn lately in the movie, and people are confusing it for a love story. So we wanted to kind of point out that this is really destructive behavior. So, again, I thank you for calling in. I appreciate you taking the time to do that.
Thank you for having me.
Good night.
want to add to that. That was a good comment that the listener had, because it's a fair comment.
Right.
But if he were listening, also one of the things that Michael H. said was that he lost everything. And because of time, we didn't get a chance to go into a lot of stuff, but the loss was because of the neglect. You know, he just, it's similar to like what the therapist just explained, he spent numerous amounts of time being so overwhelmed and distracted with just sometimes. You're being with 5 and 6 people a day, and you're a physician. How are you able to maintain not being able to stay on top of paperwork? So his loss in license, you know, was because of the neglect, and it was a serious loss. So just want to mention, when we're saying harm, because we always see the crackhead who goes out and robs somebody, but there are actually functional crack addicts who are not robbing anyone. They like the therapist said, have 6-figure salaries,
right,
you know, and they're able to maintain. And so we just want to, you know, when we're thinking about that.
One thing that I am appreciative of Michael calling it is that he put a face to it. He let us know that here he is, a physician, and he had this problem. He had this addiction. So it's not just, he put another face to it, whereas sometimes we might look at this as that person who's down and out, living in his mother's basement or something like that, and just, you know, sitting there with the tapes and the videotapes and the clicker in his hand. But he put another face to this issue and let us know that you can very well be a professional person. You can be what society considers successful and still have this addiction, still suffer with this problem. So I'm very appreciative, Michael. Once again, thank you for coming and sharing your story with us and giving us even another view. And Ms. Ellis, are you still with us?
I'm here. I'm just having a difficult time hearing clarity the other part of
it. I can repeat what I said. I was just expressing that Michael, our guest who was on earlier, that he gave us another face to the sexual addiction. He's a professional. He's a physician. So this isn't maybe what the average person might think of a sex addict, somebody who's down and out on their luck, or, you know, just a grungy person maybe. You know, what I said was living in his mom's basement, sitting there with all these videotapes. But here he was, what we would as society consider to be a success. So he put another face on this, at least for me. He painted another face to this.
Well, I think the face that he painted was just another aspect of what goes on in our society. We have to be mindful. I think sometimes people expect certain addictions to fit certain groups of people.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's like when cocaine was the big thing, it was considered sort of a rich man's high. Alcoholism and weed was sort of like the average guy. And so when we look at judges, doctors, attorneys, or other highly professional individuals with this sort of behavior, we're sort of shocked sometimes. But the reality is that, you know, you have to look at what the behavior is doing for the person, you know. And so sometimes when a person may have inadequacy in one area of their lives or may have unresolved issues in their lives, you know, this is a behavior sometimes that could fulfill that superficially or give a sense of filling that void. And it can, if a person struggled with self-esteem issues and not feeling good about themselves, but they had resources to go out here and buy whatever they want sexually, that will temporarily fill that void for them. But then that's also creating a whole new set of problems, because now that becomes a way of trying to cope with it. And so when you have highly professional people that have this addiction, I look at it from this perspective. I've said this for years. The more resources you have, the bigger your playground is. For a person with limited resources, their sex addiction might limit them to a city or a geographic location in their state. For a person who has unlimited resources or great resources, their sex addiction could, the world can be their playground. So the more areas they have to go play anonymously.
We have to thank you for sharing with us tonight. We really appreciate it, but our time has run out.
Okay,
thank
it was
you
no
for
problem. Thank
in
you
tonight.
For allowing me to be the part. Okay.
Wow.
Okay.